This is A State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stachow. Many of us have daily access to more health information than ever before. Starbucks clearly displays calorie counts next to every product, Fitbits track our steps, and we can even get meal delivery services that measure out our exact portions. But despite all of that, many people still struggle to meet their health goals. So if lack of knowledge isn't the reason or isn't the problem for our choices, then what is? It's a question that behavioral economist Dan Ariely has been looking into for years, and he argues that finding the solution means looking deep into our psyche. Dan Ariely is the James B. Duke Professor of Psychology and Behavioral Economics at Duke University. Welcome back to the show.
Lovely to be here.
So we've talked with you plenty of times about your research into decision-making. But this time, we really want to focus on health. So you say, despite having knowledge and good intentions, we still behave in ways that may be suboptimal for our long-term health goals.
Not maybe, are suboptimal.
That are suboptimal.
And first of all, this idea that knowledge is not enough is really important. And it's okay if I ask you a few questions?
Yeah.
Have you ever texted while driving?
Yes.
Do you know it's dangerous?
I do.
So this is kind of a shocking example, right? Where you say to people, do you know it's dangerous? And people say, yes, it's unbelievably stupid. And have you done it before? Yes. And do you think you'll keep on doing it again? The answer is yes. And you know what happened in states that legislated it's illegal? Accident rate goes up. Why up? Because people stop texting above the wheel and they start texting below the wheel. And you know, every time when we think that it's just about information. If we only tell people, if we said smoking is dangerous, texting and driving is dangerous, you should wash your hands, it will just solve itself. The answer is no. Like, we don't really have good examples in human history when just telling things has been enough. Now, there have been some successes, like smoking. We reduced it from 40% to 20%. But the reduction did not come from knowing that it's dangerous. It came from social pressure. It came from kids. It came from taxes, all kinds of other things like that. So let's talk about weight and health in general. So when we started thinking about this, we said we want to be on people's mind, right? Because knowledge doesn't mean that it's on your mind, right? But we wanted to be on people's mind. So think about your house, your home. When do you think about health? You know, you could say, oh, I'm just sitting there in my bed, and all of a sudden I say, oh, time to think about health. No, that doesn't happen. But there are things that you see around you that some of them remind you about health. So what is it about people's home that reminds us about health? It's basically the toothbrush and the scale. You know, maybe if you have gym equipment, that one. But the refrigerator is mixed news, right? Some healthy, some not. But the toothbrush and the bathroom scale are kind of an amazing starting point.
So when we think about starting points, we know the research shows fad diets don't work. Focusing just on a number on a scale doesn't work. We need to think about health from a broader perspective. It's not just BMI. It's all of the choices we make on our day-to-day basis.
Yep.
So how do you approach this question from a behavioral economic standpoint that considers that we need a multifaceted approach?
Yep. So there's going to be lots of things to do, but we started with this scale. We said, okay, if somebody gives you 2 square feet of their bathroom floor, take it. Right? And then we said, what do we know about this scale? What is good about the scale? What doesn't work about the scale? And we know 3 things about the scale. The first thing we know, it's really good to stand up on the scale every morning. And the reason it's good, it's like a real ritual. You step on the scale, you remind yourself that you want to be healthy, and you eat a little bit less for breakfast. If you step on the scale in the evening and you just go to bed, that doesn't help because by the morning, you forgot the whole thing. Right? So it's good to step on the scale in the morning. That's fact number one. Fact number two, weight fluctuates. Weight for somebody who is not overweight can fluctuate 2 or 3 pounds a day. Somebody who's obese, it can fluctuate 8 pounds a day. It has to do with how much salt you had and when you went to the bathroom, and if you're a woman, your menstrual cycle, all kinds of things influence this fluctuation. And this fluctuation creates what we call scale aversion. So in behavioral economics, we have a notion of loss aversion. Loss aversion is in the financial realm. The idea that we are much more miserable when we lose money than we're happy when we gain money. So if you lost $1,000 today, you'll be really miserable. If you gain $1,000 tomorrow, you'll be happy, but not enough to make up for it. It's about a ratio of 2-to-1. You'll have to make up $2,000 to make up for the psychological misery of losing $1,000. With weight, of course, it's the opposite. But imagine somebody doesn't change their weight. You just go up and down by 2 pounds. On the day it goes up by 2 pounds, real misery. On the day it goes down by 2 pounds, slight happiness. What do you have? High misery, slight happiness, high misery, slight happiness. On average, it's not good news. And if you ask people, do you look forward to stepping on the scale? The answer is no. It's a device that even though it's good to step on the scale in the morning, we don't. And then the third thing we know is that people expect that their weight will change very quickly when they go on a diet. So people say, I've been on a diet since yesterday morning. You know, like forever. And then you step on a scale and nothing good happens. And then you do it for another day, another day. And the body can take 2 weeks to react. But our theory is that body would react much, much faster. So what happens? We get demotivated. You go on a diet for 5 days. You step on your scale and nothing happened. Or maybe it even went up by 0.5 pounds. So what did we decide to do? We said, let's separate the act of stepping on a scale from the feedback. So we created a scale with no display. And we said, let's get people to step on a scale. And if they step on a scale in the morning, we say, congratulations, you've done your job. And then we do give people feedback, but in an app. And it's not in pounds. It's in a 5-point feedback mechanism. We say, congratulations, nothing happened. You're just the same, right? Which we want to celebrate nothing bad happened, which is, it's great news. Nothing bad happened, but usually we don't celebrate it.
So if you start from the premise, though, that weighing yourself daily is inherently a good thing, I think there are people who would argue and say, well, that can actually lead to a disordered relationship with food, a disordered relationship with your body. How does this scale respond to that? How are you trying to think about health from a broader perspective than just the number? Obviously, you don't see the number, but it's still, weight is still a part of how the scale is measuring your progress.
That's right. So I think it is about the number because nobody would tell you stepping on the scale is a bad idea, right? It's like a little religious ritual, right? You step on the scale, you say, I want to be healthy. And that's basically what it is. And we don't give you back the feedback and we don't give you the feedback in decimals. Like, you know, this idea of being obsessed with numbers and so on did not exist in a world where we had the mechanical scale with a thick needle when we didn't really know our weight. We just kind of knew the general vicinity.
Does the scale allow me the opportunity to personalize what I may define as health? If it's not a number on a scale, does it allow me to say, to measure my health based on other markers?
So let's first of all finish with the scale. The scale basically gives you feedback in a 5-point scale. You're just the same, or the trend of the last 3 weeks is in the wrong direction, slightly worse, slightly better, much better. And that's all we give people back, right? And we're basically saying information is not about historical accuracy, and we don't want you to be obsessed with the numbers. We just want you to understand what kind of changes you're making and what is it leading. Is it leading to small improvement, large improvement, small deterioration, large deterioration. But we also give people the opportunity to define different health goals. So, for example, you could say, I want to lose weight. And then we define losing weight as the right goal. You can also say, I want to maintain weight. We also have an algorithm for pregnant women who want to increase weight, but at a certain rate. So basically, you can tell us what your goal is, right? We don't want to intervene with people's goals, right? People have very different goals. But once you have the goal what we want to do with the scale is we want to help you remind yourself of your goal and to basically keep track in a way that helps you understand what actions you're doing and what the outcomes are. So imagine a woman who's pregnant wants to increase her weight. For us, the middle level that says you're just the same is saying you're on track for your weight gain, right? So that's the goal, but you're slightly too high, slightly too low. The other thing that you mentioned in the beginning is that it's not just about the weight. Mm-hmm. There's other things to do. And one of the big lessons in behavioral economics is that the environment matters, right? If I came to your house and every morning and I brought a fresh tray of donuts and muffins and croissants, you will be less healthy at the end of the year. Now, you might not be tempted every day, but you'll be tempted many times. So what we do is we start with a relatively long survey in which we ask people to tell us things about their environment. Do you have kids? Don't you have kids? Do you have a dog? Do you walk to work? Is there a bus? Is there a cafeteria? Can you make lunch at home? One of the best things we could do is to stop eating in the cafeteria at work and get a sandwich, right? The difference in quality of food is very high, but you need to be able to do that. So we ask people lots of questions about their environment, and then every time they step on a scale and they open the app, we also recommend little tricks.
So these are what you call missions. So give me an example of some of the missions you encourage people to go on to assist with this behavior change.
So some missions are, for the next week, we want you to have a glass of water before you have lunch. Right? That basically fills you up a little bit. People eat less. Some mission could be about fruit. And then there's other missions that are about reorganizing your refrigerator. Right? Take the healthy things, put them at eye level. Take the unhealthy thing, put them below. Some missions have to do with, let's go over your shopping list and let's look at what they have. Or let's look over your pantry. So the missions have to do with physical activity. They have to do with eating. We try to cover all of those. And because we have the scale, we know which missions seems to work for each person. So imagine I gave you 5 missions, but I also kept your track of your weight. And I see which missions you seems to work better on you and work worse. Now I can learn about you and I can propose new missions that are going to be more effective for you over time. So there's a learning mechanism to try to figure out what little tricks of the trade are going to work for you. Is taking the bus and getting off a little earlier and walking, is that going to be what's helpful? Or is it working in the garden? Or is it having an apple before lunch? So we try lots of things with people and see what works for them.
So you look at, so I can set my goal, I can tell the scale, this is what my goal is, I'm reminded of these missions to accomplish every day. But for behavior change, you argue that you need sort of friction, resistance, and fuel, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like this is trying to combine both of those together. What have you learned about the other ways in which we can increase our motivation to achieve our goals?
Yeah. So first of all, our scale works, right? So the good news is we tested it in 4 call centers. We went to call centers, which basically don't pay very well, as we know, and the vast majority of people are obese. Also people who sit most of the day. And we did an experiment. Some people got the regular scale that says you're 225 pounds, 0.3, and some people got our scale. And the people who got the regular scale gained 0.3% of their body weight every month for 5 months, right? That's the basic result. People just slowly increased their weight. The people who got our scale lost 0.7% of their body weight every month for 5 months. Now, you can say 0.7, it's not enough. It's a great start, right? It's a great start. But of course, that's the scale.
And yeah, beyond
it's
the
good
scale.
News. And then there's other things that we need to do. A big part of what we need to do is portion control.
Tell me about the study you did with Panda Express. It was fascinating.
Yeah. So portion control, you know, it's so tempting to put more food on the plate. And we almost always finish it, right? It's this magical thing that no matter how much you put in, it doesn't seem like you feel satiated until we finished everything on the plate. And we get used to different amounts of food. So it's not just about the short term. Once you eat a lot, you start craving more food. The study with Panda Express basically tested 2 things. The first thing we tested was what happens if we put calorie information out there, and the answer was nothing. Right? People did not eat differently. The other one was to ask people to say, would you like half a portion of rice? So rice is about 400 to 500 calories. Cutting that to half is a big deal. Now, not everybody wanted it, but a third of the people took us on this offer, and then they ate less and got less calorie. And weight is really a game of 200 calories a day. That's
2,000?
200.
Okay.
Like, if you think about, like, it seems the obesity epidemic at some level seems unbelievably terrible. On the other hand, if people just cut 200 calories from their diet every day, that's enough.
But is that assuming that losing weight is just a problem of willpower when really it has to do with so many other factors, your autoimmune system, your environment, your ability to access exercise and healthy food?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that come with it. And I don't want to make light of of the idea that it's easy to cut calories. But when you think about it this way, you realize that, you know, we're slowly killing ourselves, right? It's a game of small steps. Like you say, 200 calories, not a big deal. It is a huge deal if it comes every day, and the consequences for our health are terrible. Now, we just finished a study on diabetics.
It's the idea of breaking points.
Yes.
Okay.
And diabetes has this amazing measure called A1C, which you can take, and it basically gives you the history of how able you are to handle your diabetes. So it's not just about today. It's a measure that kind of lasts for the last 3 months, right? Our body kind of remembers something about the last 3 months of how we've handled our diabetes. Blood sugar level is just this moment. A1C gives you kind of the history. And we said, you know, some people are unable to handle their A1C. They're not able to control it. And some people are able. What differentiate those? And the starting point could be maybe the people who do it understand the risks. No, it turns everybody knows the risks. Maybe they understand what steps they need to take. Medication, eating, exercising. No, everybody knows. Every kind of rational thing we tested about information or risk or even motivation, we didn't find a difference. What we did find is this thing called breakpoints. And breakpoints is the idea that at some point, you're just tired. You're just tired and exhausted, and you want to say, I don't know if you can say it in the radio, but you know, you want to say,
I'm done.
That's it. I need to compensate. I can't just suffer the whole time. I'm not doing those things anymore. I want something fun now.
And you have decision fatigue, right? I've constantly been making this decision every hour of my day to check my blood sugar, to eat healthy food, and now it's 9 p.m. and I'm exhausted.
And you're exhausted and you say, I'm just going to have fun. I'm not going to think about the future. I'm not going to. And, you know, and we do these things. What do? We eat fried food, high calorie sweets, sugar. Those are the things we do, which are the worst things for diabetes. So what we find is that managing life for people with low income and managing life for people with diabetes is extra hard. And what happened when it's so hard and so difficult? At some point, you just give up. You just want to reward yourself. You want to comfort yourself. You want to do something fun. And you do the exact things that make your health worse. So it does mean, if we go back to the scale, it does mean that the struggle for our health is a daily struggle. And you don't have to fail a lot, right? It's like texting and driving. You can say, oh, I only text and drive 1% of the time. That can still kill you, right? The same thing happens with food and breakpoints and not exercising and so on. It really is a daily struggle. And as long as we surround ourselves with lots of cheap, available, unhealthy food, and the healthy food and exercising are more tempting, we need something on our side, and we need that thing on our side to be with us all the time. So we need a scale. We need something to help us with our shopping list. We need to do something that helps us at lunch. We need lots and lots of different tools, almost like an armor. Like, you know, we're going to war. We're going to war. The world is trying to tempt us to eat less healthily, and we need to protect ourselves in all kinds of ways. And at least we're starting to understand how difficult the fight is and starting to give people some tools to fight back.
Wonderful. We will keep track of your research, I'm sure. Dan Ariely is the James B. Duke Professor of Psychology and Behavioral Economics at Duke University and the author of numerous books about the psychology of decision making. His numberless scale is called SHAPA. You can find more information about all of it on our website. Thanks so much, Dan, for stopping by.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Just ahead, we will look at the great rivalries behind great art. Stay with us.